Welcome to Nattering with the Knights, Nord Anglia International School Hong Kong's PE department, talking about sport, physical activity, health, and a host of other topics.
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of Nattering with the Knights, our first one since the summer break. And I'm joined today by Mr. Reid, who's making his return to school. How are you, Mr. Reid?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks, Mr. Erskine. It's been quite a while since I've enjoyed being in between the four walls of the school, but happy to be back, ready to go.
Two athletes making their recovery and talking about a summer of sport. So that's the topic today. We're going to make this a relatively informal podcast. We're going to talk about some of the fantastic sport that we've been able to digest over the summer. It's been quite a long holiday for us teachers in Hong Kong, but with some great sport to keep us entertained, it's certainly been a memorable one. So I've got Mr. Reid on because obviously he is a high-end athlete like myself. But the main one that we're going to talk about, or main two events, we might touch on some other ones, are Euro 2020, which was obviously played this summer, 2021, and also the Olympics. And obviously, Mr. Reid, being a big football fan and an Englishman, he's going to probably quite enjoy talking about the Euros. So, yeah, let's dive into that. First of all, how did you feel as an Englishman about the whole tournament?
Well, I mean, I think from the word go, I was saying it was always coming home. yeah, so jokes aside, yeah, I mean, great tournament, not just from being an England fan, but a great tournament to watch as a supporter, spectator, particularly as we've not had the opportunity to kind of watch much sport over the last 18 months. Mm-hmm. And yeah, personally for me, a great journey watching England progress through the rounds, obviously a nail-biter in the group stages against Scotland.
That, honestly, we'll come back to that, but as a Scotsman, I can't believe how proud I was of that evening, but I'll let you carry on a bit.
But yeah, I think the disappointment of the final, you know, it still hurts, but I think I'm slowly getting over it. And, you know, not that I'm really old, but, you know, I've gone through a few journeys with the English football team over the years where losing on penalties has become part of the norm. And, yeah, you don't even have to be an England fan to know that about England. So, yeah, I've witnessed many times in the World Cups of 1990, Euro 96 as well, and now this time around where it's just a shame that a final is decided that way, I feel, for all fans that are watching it.
How would you feel? What would you do as an alternative? So it's a draw after 90 minutes, still after extra time. What are you doing? Coin toss? No, well, arm wrestle?
No, I actually quite like, I've seen it in Hong Kong. You know, my boys have played football in Hong Kong and for various teams. And there was a competition that I was at one day where a winner had to be decided. And they didn't want to do penalties because they felt it was not a very nice way to decide like a very competitive game. So what they did is, and this was seven-a-side football, is after every minute you had to take a player off.
Yeah, I've seen that in sevens. Yeah,
so,
that's good.
And really good, actually, really quite exciting. And they got down to the last two players. It was 2v2.
On a seven-a-side pitch, yeah. That's
so, again, I suppose it's not quite nice. It's not very nice for the team, the losing team, for that to happen. But made it a great spectacle to watch.
Yeah.
And obviously quite exciting and very tactical. You're obviously trying to work out who you're keeping on.
Yeah.
Do you keep your goalkeeper
on? Which a lot of teams in the sevens, when I saw that, did not. They put an outfielder who knew what he was doing in goals, kept them on.
Yeah, or your utility player that can play on pitch and in goal. But again, conversations I've had for the neutral fan, a penalty shootout is also quite a great thing to watch. If you're not fussed about who wins or loses, and I've watched many penalty shootouts where I've not had any interest in it, and it's actually just quite a good thing to watch because, you know, just watching the players walk up to the spot and the psychological battle they're going through with the goalkeeper. Yeah, but anyway, I'm slowly getting over the disappointment. But yeah, what a great tournament.
So. Yeah, overall, I think great tournament. I can't really judge it on its the kind of rotating cities, the host cities thing. I mean, obviously, it was strange to see so many countries across Europe have different rules. So you obviously had some countries where stadiums were almost full, and you had some countries where there was absolutely nobody, and then there was a little bit in between. I mean, England started with like 11,000 fans, and then by the time the final came around, we were up at 50,000, which was a little bit of a strange one. Obviously, heartbroken that I couldn't go, because I always vowed, as a Scotsman, it's been 23 years since Scotland qualified for a major championship, and after they kept failing throughout the years, I've always vowed that when they made it, I would go, because I didn't know if it would ever happen again in my lifetime. And even worse, at the fact that two of the games were at Hampden, so it would have been like a couple hours drive, and then I couldn't obviously go. But the England-Scotland game for me was a massive highlight in terms of Scotland have come a long way of, again, England fans maybe talk about disappointment, but I mean, you've tasted nothing till you're Scottish, believe me. And to always be the missing out in the last hour. So to take a team like England, who are better, reluctantly, I will admit that, but and we didn't just sit back and absorb and get a draw. We kind of took the game to them, and with what we had available, I thought it was a really good game. I think as an English fan, they would have been disappointed with how England played, and they wouldn't have maybe thought it was that good a game. But I think, I mean, I was on the edge of my seat thinking we had a couple of half chances, and it was, and then obviously the highlight of the tournament was really when Callum Gregor scored against Croatia the next game, and then we were undone by a better team. I mean, you saw Luka Modric's goal, which is just standard. The caliber of player, it shows a difference. And so it was a short welcome back to major championships for us, but enjoyable all the same. And then, I found myself not supporting England, because I find that hard to do, but I didn't actively want them to lose as much as I probably have done in the past. I actually watched the final, obviously early start, 3 a.m. or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I was actually getting my second surgery. So I was in hospital watching it on my phone, which was quite a strange experience, because it went on a lot longer than I wanted it to as well with the penalty. So.
Yes, well, coming on to that, actually, I know... not that I want to talk about the final that much, but it was an occasion, and I managed to source myself a projector, a big, huge white screen, and I managed to set up on the roof where we live, like a big outdoor kind of sports arena, draped in bunting and flags, and then we had friends over to watch the final. So very odd for people to be arriving at your property at 2:30 a.m. To host an event with cups of tea and bacon rolls.
rather than other refreshments.
Yes, but also it was really nice to share that with lots of friends. My kids' friends were all there as well. So, and it was obviously very lucky that it was in the summer holiday, so it had no impact on school. We were very lucky with the timing of it, because obviously if it had kicked off an hour later, we wouldn't have been able to watch it, because when the sun rose, the sun came up at like 6 a.m. We could just about see the end of the penalty shootout.
Oh, because of the project and the lighting.
Because of the daylight had come back. So although it was a painful watch, we were blinkered by daylight as well, the rising of the sun. But just coming back to the past tournaments, I've been lucky enough, because I've been around a bit longer than you, Mr. Erskine, not that you would obviously realise that. I went to the opening ceremony of Euro 96 back at Wembley. I didn't go to the classic England-Scotland game of that tournament, but we went to, it was England against Switzerland, and it was a boring 1-1 draw, but that was at the old Wembley, but that also ended in penalty shootout disappointment as well. But so I feel your pain in terms of wanting to go and see your team, your country, a national or a big event, because it is great. And
it's very rare, evidently, if you're Scottish, so therefore you really want to double down when you can.
So hopefully, fingers crossed, with the World Cup qualifiers almost upon us.
Yes.
You never know.
Clinging on to hope that we get there and I can personally get there as well.
In 2022. I believe.
Yes.
November. Qatar.
Oh, Qatar, yeah.
Yeah. So Who knows?
Yeah, let's hope so. And then obviously there was some other big events across the summer. Obviously before we jump into the Olympics, which was a big highlight, there were other ones. You know, you had the Lions Tour, South Africa, you had the British Open, the golf, you had Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Any particular highlights across the board in those things? I mean, I know you're into your rugby as well. Yeah. I personally didn't see much of the Lions, but
so I've always been an avid tennis follower, but I didn't really see any of the Wimbledon, unfortunately, just because of the time it was on, and I didn't actually have to be able to see it. But the Lions Tour that's just finished, continuing the disappointment. I watched all three tests with friends, it kind of just didn't really kind of unfold into, I think, what was expected for everyone. Maybe if you're South African, you'd argue against that, because obviously the South Africans did a great job and stepped up as world champions and won the test, overall test, 2-1. But I think historically, the Lions has been something that we've always had in the UK, and it would be a shame, because there is talk that they're thinking about stopping it.
Okay.
I don't know how far down the line that is. I'm sure it won't, but it would be a shame to lose that, because in terms of just identity and just, again, another sporting spectacle, not just for the tourists, the Lions, but also for the welcoming country. Like, you know, you go to Australia, you go to New Zealand, you go to South Africa, and, you know, it's part of their history as well in terms of what it brings to them as a nation and how proud they are. You know, just look at how proud South Africa are of their rugby, and the fact that they have a touring team come and take them on. And that was what's so good about watching the British and Irish Lions, you know, go and visit these countries and try to obviously take the game to them. But the game in itself, apart from, I would say, the early stages of the first game and some of the stages of the third game, the second game was not very good at all, unfortunately. But yeah, it wasn't really the sporting spectacle that I was hoping for. Mm. I thought we'd see much more open play rugby, but we didn't. Anyway.
That's because you had a ton of Scottish players in the Lions, and maybe a bit restrictive. I mean, personally for me, I really enjoyed the British Open, the golf. I'm really into watching the golf when it's available to me. I like to attempt to play, although haven't done in a few years. And it was impressive to see Morikawa, who's from Japanese parents but is American, just look so comfortable, which is in one of the biggest tournaments in the world, and just look so lacking in nerves, really. It was very refreshing to see, and he closed out really well on that last day to win. And just, it was a very diverse leaderboard of a group of players that maybe wouldn't usually be at the top end of a major tournament. So yeah, it was a really good spectacle. So I enjoyed that as well. I'm not sure that a lot of people would agree with watching the golf, but it's always one that I enjoy. Mm. Right, let's move on to the Olympics, because the Olympics for me, it's the first time I've watched the Olympics on that level, because it's the first time it's been, and I know London 2012 was in the time zone, it should have been, but I actually wasn't in the UK at the time, I was in the States.
Yeah.
And therefore I saw very little, even though it was obviously an amazing,
yeah,
amazing Olympics for Team GB specifically. But this one, because the weather was horrible here, I found myself not being too worried that I wasn't going out very much. I was happy to watch the Olympics. And some of the things that I saw were just phenomenal. But I'll come to you first. So what kind of, can you think of any major highlights or things you enjoyed?
Again, like you, the Olympics, 2012 was obviously huge. But then I just want to say, obviously, since the Olympics has finished, it does feel that there's a bit of a hole in my life at the moment, because I got so used to watching it or watching bits of it when I could tap into it. But for me, what started it off, and it was the timing of it, really, because I just walked in the front door. I picked the boys up from they'd been out, and Tom Daly was about to start his the synchronized diving, the 10-meter synchronized diving, and I said to my children, I said, look, we have to watch this, because Tom Daly, this will probably be, lots of people might not know, but he, his first Olympics, he was 14 years old. I think it was Beijing 2008 was his first Olympics. And he was like this, like the youngest ever athlete for Team GB back in 2008. He's now about 27 years old and a great diver, but had never won Olympic gold. He'd won Olympic bronze, he'd won Olympic silver, he'd been the world champion over his time. And it was the one medal that had always eluded him. And I said to the boys, we have to watch this just because you never know.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what could happen. And we saw it from the start to the finish, and he won gold. It was amazing. And my children were really immersed and got into it because it became this battle, I think, between China and Team GB, yep. Where China was slightly ahead on the scores, and then I think they made one small error on their synchronized dive, which then opened the door for Team GB, and it was all on the last dive. And was it Matt Tully? I think it was his dive partner. Yeah. I think it might be Matt Tully. They absolutely just nailed their last dive.
Oh, yeah, I remember
and
seeing
it
the
was,
reaction.
It was one on, yeah, it was literally one on like a tiny, tiny margin of points, but he got his gold. And it was amazing. And, you know, the journey that he's been on, not that I followed him, but I just kind of knew because he's been around for so long, like, you know, he was bullied at school as a youngster because of his diving and had to move schools. And then I think he lost his dad when he was, I think it was just before the 2012 Olympics, like his dad passed away with brain hemorrhage. And, you know, he's been on this real roller coaster emotional journey, and he's stuck with it, and all of this kind of, like, you know, and I was explaining this to my children, and then obviously he won his gold medal, so for me, obviously there's been lots of other highlights, but that's a standout moment for me, one of them.
That was on my list, so yeah. I'll jump to my next one, because it's that reaction. It's hard not to even like feel yourself almost welling up when you see him jump on his partner, and it's just like the sheer raw emotion that he showed, because it's like you can imagine that overwhelming pressure he's felt for so many years and the expectation level.
Yeah.
And he's finally what deems to be delivered, however you deem success, but finally in his, to probably answer a lot of his critics, has delivered on the biggest stage. So very happy for him. For me, especially at the start, Tom Daley's gold was near the start of the Olympics, and again, near the start of the Olympics was the swimming. And again, the swimming's hard to turn off. You find yourself saying, I'll watch a couple of heats, and before you know it, you've sat for an hour and a half and watched race after race. And Adam Peaty winning gold again, retaining the 100 metre breaststroke gold medal. And it's just, again, it was his reaction. He's a very passionate guy, a very raw interview afterwards. Maybe not the most PC in some of his language choice, which is why I love him. And yeah, just a proper competitor. And I really enjoyed seeing him do that again, because again, huge expectation. He is the best in the world at that stroke. And everybody had expected him to do it, but it's not the same. You're in a different environment. As all the athletes outlined this year, there's been a lot of challenges that have been outside of their control. And I think that it was probably a bit of relief that he was again able to do that. And then at the back end of the Olympics, another highlight, and I'm sure Mr. Pate would back this up. So a previous guest of ours, Coach Andy Young, one of his athletes, Laura Muir, just in the last couple of days of the Olympics there, took silver in the 1500 metres on the track. A very, very good silver. British record at the same time. Broke the world record. But obviously the girl that won it also broke the world record and came in first. But I mean, a phenomenal race to beat one of the favourites as well in Hassan.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, an impressive silver medal. And I don't think she could have probably done much more. So he did predict that in the podcast, that she would be in the medal contention.
Okay.
And he's delivered.
Yeah.
And so has she. And that was great to see. So we're hoping to convince Laura on at the podcast, actually.
Okay.
That's on the list, Mr. Pate's to-do list,
okay,
which I think is quite short, so he's got time to follow that through. Any other ones that you can...
Yeah, coming back to the swimming, again, watching the mixed medley,
okay.
Did you see that?
Yeah,
that was really interesting, because it was, I think it's a brand new event to have in the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And again, Team GB had qualified for the final as one of the fastest teams. You've got two female, two male, and they, you know, they have to share the range of strokes. And what's interesting about it is you don't have to there's no set standard of who swims what leg.
I see, so it can be a, you could send out your male first, yeah, and another team could send the female first. Yeah.
So, yeah, so I think like at the start of the race, Team GB were last after the first stroke,
mm-hmm,
because of the way, obviously, the order had been done by the other countries. And then, you know, got to the last lap, the freestyle, and Team GB brought the gold home and broke the world record.
Mm.
And that was, again, just a real nice spectacle to watch. Similarly to the, I think they, again, the first time this Olympics, they've done a mixed 4x4 relay race, which I didn't actually see. But yeah, they're just obviously like they're trying these new events out, mm-hmm, sort of like mixing the genders together.
They did it in triathlon actually, yeah, as well, which was, oh, yeah, good. Was, like, I don't know, relay in the triathlon was interesting, but there, yeah, was a mixed one, and like, yeah, obviously we took a gold in that as Team GB.
Yeah, but a big one for me was the BMX team. Again, the two characters that were riding for Team GB,
yes,
I say characters, what characters they are, I think just really, you know, just epitomise kind of what the Olympics is about, where you've got, that's Beth Schriever, I think her surname is,
mm-hmm,
had a funding cut by...
Sport UK?
Yeah, Sport UK had a funding cut, so she was no longer able to train, so she had to do her own fundraising or crowdfunding events to get her to train.
And she was a part-time TLA as well.
She was, that's correct. And yeah, you just watch that event and wow, what a white knuckle event that is. I mean, that is, they are putting, I'm not saying that the other athletes in the Olympics aren't, but they are putting everything on the line, because if they crash, because they're going, I think they're going like 50 at the start of the race, 50-60 kilometers an hour
in a single gear,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, and I did see some crashes, like, you know,
there was that guy from the States,
I think luckily he's okay. But yeah, to bring away, so obviously Kai White went first, I think, in the men's final and won silver.
Yeah.
And then Beth went in the ladies' final, and she brought home the gold. And it was just great to watch.
And just their reaction as well.
Yeah, their reaction at the end. It's just like, I think it's made one of the photos, you know, in the UK.
I see. She literally,
yeah,
and imagine the build-up of lactic acid.
Yeah.
She probably couldn't even stand up, and he literally scooped her up.
Yeah, and talking about Adam Peaty on his post interview, I think her interview as well was quite entertaining, but
yeah,
also quite fruity in terms of
just raw.
Yeah, yeah, you could just see,
not very polished.
No, I don't think the BBC were very happy with.
But
you know, you can't. There's nothing you can.
That's going to always make most people happy,
yeah,
I think.
So I mean, honestly, there's so many and some events. I think, you know, talking to friends, you find yourself becoming. You become one of these novice experts in all the events that you watch.
That's not a point.
Yeah.
The taekwondo, I'm passing comment on the judging as if I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So you
can't help it.
You find yourself sort of like drawn into watching all these weird and wonderful sports that you never would normally watch. And then at the end of it, you're telling your friend sort of like how it operates, and like, you know, you're an expert at every single event that you've watched in the Olympics, which is what's great about the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it kind of left a hole. For now, so I need to find something else.
Yeah, and I also want to swing it back to, given we are in Hong Kong, the Hong Kong medal front.
Yeah,
there was a couple. Now, how do you say Siobhan's last name?
I don't know.
She's got an Irish father. That's
right.
Why the last name is that.
Okay,
we're just going to call her Siobhan. But she won two medals in the pool.
Yeah.
Again, it was one of, I think it was Hong Kong's first ever medals in the swimming pool. Phenomenal performance from her in two events. She was born and raised in Hong Kong, as far as I know, but is now based in the States. I think she's at university there, but has a Hong Kong, I think, mother and an Irish father, which is hence the last name, which I can't pronounce and don't want to butcher on the podcast. So, but that was great for Hong Kong to be involved in the medals.
Yeah.
And probably give, again, hopefully, I would really hope a lot of our pupils were watching it, wherever they're from.
Yeah.
And then where you get these success stories are the things you kind of cling on to. We've talked a lot about Team GB because that's obviously who we were generally watching.
Mm.
But I think that there has to be hope that our pupils that are maybe from Hong Kong also were looking at that and thinking, found themselves some new inspiration and kind of heroes, if you like.
I was getting a taxi, actually. We were going out... a few weeks ago, and you know, I just happened, and the taxi driver, I got talking to him about the Olympics, and honestly, the you know, he was so proud. So obviously for Hong Kong, I think at that point Hong Kong, I think Siobhan had won her medal,
mm-hmm.
and also I think it was the fencing as well. They won one of their medals in, and immensely proud to obviously say that you know Hong Kong have got some, you know, because I think it's their best ever medal tally,
mm-hmm.
And then you know the point that he made, which is rightly so, is the percentage, the population wise percentage, the amount of people that are in Hong Kong. Although we're obviously all, it's quite, you know, there's 7 million people in Hong Kong. In terms of the age bracket, you probably need to be, you know, a functioning athlete to compete at that level. It's very, very small.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, so that's why it makes it so special compared to obviously the bigger countries that have got a bigger pool of population to pick from. So again, he was immensely proud, and it was great to obviously talk to him about something on the same level, but from a few, two different countries' perspective, you know. So it was really good.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of other. I feel like I'm going to miss one. The last one I'll say actually was Jason Kenny. Last kind of few events on the velodrome. The velodrome is again another one. It's almost impossible to turn off. It's like you're going, I'm not watching these guys continue to go around the track, and before you know it, you're watching the whole thing. And again, for a guy who's been in so many Olympics, I dread to think how hard it is to generate force on the pedals in the velodrome. Like, so if you've ever watched a team pursuit, the first guy that gets let off the kind of the holder, it's his face. When they zoom in on slow-mo, the strain that he has to create to get the pedals moving, like the gear set must be so high and the power they are generating. Like, I think that if normal people try to rotate those pedals with their feet, it wouldn't move an inch.
Mm.
And these guys are just, it's the way that they can generate force. And Jason Kenny to do it for so long and still produce and be the best in the world, like I find it unbelievable.
So he's the highest Olympic, he's got the highest medal count for Team G, for Great Britain, isn't he?
Yes.
Seven times Olympian.
Yes.
Yeah. Great event. And so many events. That's what I mean. It's like you're watching some of these events, and you're thinking, actually, there's a velodrome just down the road for where we
live. Yeah. There was Hong Kong representation in the velodrome, which was quite good to see, because not a huge amount of countries probably have multiple facilities that in Hong Kong, relative to its size, actually to have a velodrome is quite good.
Mm.
The last one I'll say, and obviously we didn't really have a GB or massive success, but obviously we have pretty much the facility here to do it. A new addition was the climbing, the sport climbing. Yeah. And again, for me, I was interested. I had no clue, since listening to a couple of podcasts about it, I had no clue the dynamic and how it was done.
Mm.
The speed climbing was a bit, it's obviously that these guys look like Spider-Man when they're going up there.
Mm.
But the atmosphere of the lead climbing and the last part of their three things was so good. Like, the DJ's playing dance music and it's a great atmosphere, and there's just genuine like fear that you don't know if they're going to make the next the next kind of clip, and they keep going, and you can't help but find yourself going, go on. and I'd imagine if there was an event ever in a place where I was that was that event, you know, a lead clip, I would definitely be going, like, imagine the atmosphere in the crowd was just amazing.
So, I mean, this is what the Olympics is all about, right? So, and I think climbing was a new event for this year, along with, I think the BMXing was new, skateboarding was new.
And that was also good, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously looking ahead to Paris, you've obviously got breakdancing coming in.
Which is obviously one of your specialities.
Of course, yeah. I didn't see much of the climbing, but my point is that this is what makes the Olympics so good, because you're watching, all right, you're seeing events that you always see, but you're also seeing these niche sort of sports or events that you wouldn't normally see on the big screen. A lot like the modern pentathlon. Again, what an event.
I was Googling that the moment I saw it, and then we were talking about a laser run, and I'm not going to be shy to admit this, I genuinely was assuming there was lasers.
Yeah.
Like, and I couldn't believe what I was watching. Yeah. I was going, I fancy my chances. Not the equestrian aspect, but I think I fancy the shooting and the run.
Yeah.
I reckon I could.
So I think, like, listening to the commentators on the, so the reason why that's, that was created, that event, is because it's meant to epitomise everything about the all-round sports person. So okay. It's so you've got the swimming element, which was just trying to challenge yourself physically, so moving through the water. You've got the fencing, so that's one-to-one combat. You've got the horse riding on a horse that you don't own.
Yeah, you lose 20 minutes or something to meet the horse.
Yeah, to show that you've got like a collaborative kind of like way around of just working with an animal or something that you've, you know, you've just a problem-solving element. And then you've got the laser run at the end, so it's a run, and then the shooting.
With the
so
accuracy, you're, while you're physically fatigued.
Yeah, you're physically pushing yourself. You're physically pushing yourself to the limits, and then obviously having to focus yourself after every lap to try and shoot 5 targets before then running off again.
But the targets, was that a laser gun? Was that, because I couldn't understand when I was watching the women's one at the end where Kate French won for GB. I was so confused how the targets were going to, and again, maybe somebody's laughing at me going,
I maybe
it was really obvious, but I couldn't see it personally.
Don't know if it's a like an air gun or a spud gun or a
spud gun.
No, like I'm sure it's an infrared laser.
Must be, yeah.
You hit the target for safety.
Safety.
But what interests me about that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I only saw bits of it. I think they have their own stadium for the modern pentathlon. I think it's all done in one place. So if you look next to the Olympic Stadium, there was this funny looking building.
Oh, because I saw the equestrian layer, but then is that because was still set up?
Yeah.
From the equestrian in the modern pentathlon.
So if you watch them running around the track on the laser at the end and then shooting, they're actually running around an outdoor swimming pool.
Oh, which is where they'd done their swim event, rather than they actually didn't go to the official pool where the other swimming events
were. No, so I thought, and again, saying that we've all become professional in every sport we've watched, that's one element that I hadn't worked out, that does the modern pentathlon, does it have its own area where it all takes part?
Is that part of the event?
The equestrian goes on inside this small little stadium where the open swimming pool is, where they fence, and where they shoot and run. But again, and I said, like, you know, what a great if you've got the time, I suppose, if you've got the funding, what a great event to have a go at.
Oh,
it's
so diverse,
niche,
and just, it covers so many skill sets and. Yeah, I mean, I was impressed. I say, really, really nice way to spend the back end of the holiday, taking in so many inspirational athletes. And again, they've had a tough 5-year training block, probably a lot of uncertainty as to whether it would even go ahead, which I'd imagine is a nightmare to prepare for something of that difficulty and that level of competition. I think a load of athletes really impressed. Last thing we'll touch on is how impressive and also resilient some of these athletes are with relation to injuries, and draw a little bit of comparison to yourself, Mr. Reid. So Russian gymnast, seemingly had ruptured his Achilles 3 months or 4 months before the Olympics. And I'm talking, some of the things he was doing in the gymnastics was offensive. It was like, and obviously yourself, having coming back from a ruptured Achilles, might have been a little squeamish watching him. He was heavily taped, but I don't know if that would have been enough support for me. And then we also had Katarina Johnson-Thompson, a high medal hope for Team GB, but had ruptured her Achilles in, I think, December. And obviously had been tried to really be pushed to try and make the games. She's a heptathlete, which involves taking part in 7 track and field events. Huge ask on the body anyway, never mind with an Achilles, it's not probably fully repaired, and unfortunately, she wasn't able to finish her. So, what was your kind of? Did you watch any of those things?
I watched Katarina. I didn't see the gymnast. I know that you told me about that one. There was a couple of others as well that
it was a high jumper, I think.
Yeah, the Italian, the one that shared gold. Yeah, I'm just watching. Like, you know, obviously being a highly trained athlete myself. What they must have done psychologically more than anything, because knowing what I know now, having obviously still in recovery from mine, I'm like, how on earth? Look at Katarina, for example. Like, you know, she ruptured her takeoff leg for high jump and long jump. I know she didn't get to do long jump, I don't think, because she had to pull out.
Before the long jump.
But to have ruptured it in December and to be competing in July is very impressive indeed. Hats off to them for doing that. And I hope she comes back from obviously what she's, you know, she obviously didn't finish the heptathlon in the end. But like you say, I mean, like seven events, it's a huge, huge ask and a massive toll on the body. And, you know, we're not just talking about the Achilles here, obviously, you know, it affects everything, not just your mind, but her calf muscle, which is obviously what...
is the thing she's come up yet.
She pulled in the end in the 200 metres, I think. And I think, actually, she was in a good position coming off that bend. But, you know, these things happen, I suppose. And, yeah, but you kind of just look at these athletes and think, wow, very, very impressive.
Yeah.
Now I've got another... sporting idol to compare myself against. It was Andy Murray with the old hip resurfer ring.
Andy, I was impressed to see him at the Olympics again.
He's back out, you know, battling his injuries because again, I think, did he withdraw through injury again?
No, he survived the doubles. They just were put out.
And obviously the guys all with their ruptured Achilles, which, you know, before I did mine, you know, wasn't really on my radar at all. And then you start meeting lots of people. Oh, I know someone that's done their Achilles. It's quite common. Obviously, I've done mine worse than anyone else's.
Obviously. But that's what happens when you're at the higher end of the athletic spectrum.
Well, you're playing the, you know, the Hong Kong squash champion, you know, Monday Night Squash Club. But so there we go.
It probably gives you motivation, even more motivation and inspiration, though, to become back even better than before.
Yeah, of course.
Which we're going to see from Mr. Reid when we start our gymnastics block in the next couple of weeks, see how his recovery has been going. So I think we've probably rambled on enough, but I think that was a nice little, hopefully an insight into the summer of sport. I really hope that a lot of our pupils have been able to access at least some of that sport and come away inspired. And hopefully, with the way things are moving this year, we're going to get a lot more opportunities to access some of that, not just in PE, but also maybe in an after-school environment as well, as we look to build our own community sport programmes again after the restrictions here in Hong Kong. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back again very shortly. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Nattering with the Knights. If you want to make sure that you don't miss any future episodes, then please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please reach out to your PE teacher if you have any feedback or ideas about topics you would like to see and hear about in the future. In the meantime, have a great week, and we will see you next time.